Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. December 19th, Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live today from home here in Portland, Oregon. We had snow. We've been having snow on and off all this week, and I could not get out of my driveway today. So it's me and Higgins in the studio, and I'm sure he will weigh in and say hi to you in a bit. And Senator Bernie Sanders, of course, our first hour on the line with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour, sanders.senate.gov, his website. He's got a newsletter, a lot of news and information there. And our phone number, 866-303-2270. Bernie will be taking your calls as soon as we get through the first break. And Senator Bernie Sanders, welcome.
Good to be with you, Tom. We've got some snow here in Vermont, but apparently not as bad as you.
Well, we have 1 inch, which is enough to shut down the city.
Do a little bit better than that.
I remember it well, Bernie. In fact, I miss it. It's beautiful. I'm looking out. You know, we live in a houseboat in the river, and I'm looking out across the water at the shore, and it's all covered. It's just beautiful. It's a winter wonderland, but you can't move a car in it in the city. It just shuts down the city. Anyhow, the Bush has said he's going to loan the automakers some money, but he's going to attach some strings to it. Your thoughts?
Well, before we jump into that, and that's certainly a very important issue, you know, what I'm hearing in my state of Vermont, and I think it's true all over this country, Tom, and we can't underestimate it, there is an enormous amount of fear and apprehension about what's happening in the economy. And the degree to which things are moving so rapidly that a year or two years ago, the Bush administration was talking about how the fundamentals of the economy are sound, the economy is robust, everything is wonderful, and now we're looking into the abyss. And what we are seeing, and we can't forget about this, is right now I know people, you know people, people are losing their jobs. 500,000 people lost their jobs just last month. Unemployment is soaring. People are losing their homes. And when people lose their homes and their jobs, they're losing their health insurance. People are putting money into savings accounts and investment accounts for their retirement, and that's gone, or a substantial part of that is gone as the stock market has gone down. People are trying to save up money for their kids to get a college education. That's going down. This is a real, real tragedy. And nobody really knows exactly what's going to happen tomorrow. So I think clearly what we have to do as a nation is, A, understand how we got to where we are, make sure we never repeat this again, and then figure out in a very bold way how we revitalize this economy, how we create good-paying jobs, how we don't repeat the mistakes of the past, how we get rid of once and for all this extreme right-wing Alan Greenspan, George Bush type of ideology, which has essentially said if you do everything that the rich and large corporations want, suddenly, somehow, it's going to trickle down to ordinary people and the economy will be prosperous. And clearly, that's a crock. It hasn't worked, and we have to learn that lesson very profoundly. The immediate concerns that I have, Tom, is that I voted, I think as many of the listeners know, against this bailout for about a dozen different reasons. But one of them was
the bailout of the banks.
Bailout of the banks. And one of them was that I didn't think the middle class and working families who have seen a decline in their income under Bush should have to bail out Wall Street when those guys have made huge increases in their income and wealth. But more importantly, right now, the Bush people have spent, I think, last count, something like $335 billion of the first tranche. And it's amazing, amazing how little oversight or accountability we have from these financial institutions that we're bailing out. You know, if you came to me and you said, Bernie, you know, I need some money, I say, okay, Tom, I'm going to give you some money, but this is what you got to do with it, A, B, C, and D, and I'm going to watch you. But apparently, ABC did something last week. They asked all of the banks that had received this bailout, and they said, tell me the loans that you're making. Tell me what you're doing with the money. Only one of the banks responded. So we really don't know whether they're giving out, continuing to give out outrageous bonuses, paying dividends. We don't know if they're making loans to small businesses, if they're dealing with foreclosures, if they're really trying to get our economy stimulated and create jobs, doing the things that this ballot was supposed to do. We don't even know that. And the idea of the Bush administration perhaps asking for another $350 billion is totally incomprehensible. To my mind, to add insult to injury, as you may have seen in the papers today, the Fed came out dealing with this horrendous situation with credit cards. And I was on the House Financial Services Committee for many years, and we dealt with this issue. I raised this issue, I should say. We didn't deal with it. And what you have is credit card companies ripping off people in the most unbelievable ways through bait-and-switch tactics, to saying, sign up, and we'll give you 0 interest, 2% interest. Then, of course, they end up changing the interest rates anytime they wanted. Late fees are extraordinarily high, coming up with all kinds of ways to raise money from unsuspecting consumers. And then the Fed comes out and says, okay, we should do A, B, C, and D, all of which are fine ideas. But then they say they shouldn't go into effect until July 2010, which is basically absurd. We have to deal with the credit card crisis and the ripping off of people, especially from many of these same institutions that have received bailouts from taxpayers who are now getting money from the Fed at almost zero interest and are now charging, in some cases, consumers on their credit cards 25 or 30%. So that's an issue that has got to be dealt with. The other concern and major issue that people are going to see a lot of action on in January, before Obama becomes president, but certainly immediately after, is this stimulus package, which I strongly, strongly support. I'm not in favor of bailing out Wall Street with no strings attached, but I am in favor of rebuilding our infrastructure, creating millions of good jobs, dealing with the crumbling of our bridges, our roads, our water systems, and also to a significant degree, and this is one of the great challenges that the Obama administration and all of us are going to face, breaking our dependency on fossil fuel and foreign oil, moving to energy efficiency and wind, solar, geothermal, biomass, and other sustainable energies, and doing that and in the process creating millions of good-paying jobs. We also have to be mindful in this economic downturn that we don't want to forget about people falling, the most vulnerable people in our society, the kids, the elderly, and the sick, falling through the cracks. So we have to make sure that nobody in America goes cold, nobody in America is sleeping out on the street. We've got to worry about the cities and towns. But bottom line here, I think in this moment of great economic uncertainty, the time is now for the American people, for the President of the United States, the new President, for the Congress, to start rethinking this trickle-down ideology of tax breaks for billionaires, unfettered free trade, anti-trade unionism, and all of the other aspects of a right-wing ideology which has clearly failed.
Yeah. Even their approach to the auto bailout is, you know, we need to drive down wages to make this commitment. It's the race to the bottom. The perpetual race to the bottom.
Tom, that is exactly right. And anyone who thinks that a lot of the Republican opposition to this automobile bailout, when the Republicans defeated it a couple of weeks ago, did not have a lot to do with trying to destroy the United Automobile Workers and to, in fact, drive down wages, which are already plummeting in the automobile industry, is sorely mistaken. Now, some listeners may say, well, you know, frankly, I don't live in Detroit. I don't make cars. Why should I worry about it? Here's why you should worry about it. Historically, the gold standard for manufacturing workers was the automobile industry. Workers there earned good wages, they had good benefits, they had a strong union, they had a pension program, and so forth. And by raising that standard, it meant that in non-union manufacturing in the state of Vermont or the state of Arizona, you had a standard by which people had to respond to. And if in your gold standard area, wages go down so that people are entering the automobile industry now making $14 an hour with lower benefits, how do you think people are going to make a living wage working in a non-union shop elsewhere in this country? And you're quite right. What we're talking about here is the collapse of the middle class, a race to the bottom. You know, our big money interests tell us, well, in China they only make 50 cents an hour. How dare you ask for a living wage for your family? Yeah. So what we have seen under Bush is that race to the bottom, growing gap between the rich and the poor, an increase in poverty, and those are the kinds of trends that we really have got to reverse if we're going to save the middle class of this country.
We learned yesterday that for working men between the ages of 30 and 39, since Reagan came into office, average wages have gone down almost 16%.
It's unbelievable. That's right.
You know, when you start breaking out the numbers and looking at these individual groups, it's incredible.
And the other thing, Tom, there was a study that came out some years ago, it was unbelievable, is that if you are a high school graduate, okay, you leave high school and you go out to work, the decline in wages for that sector of our society is extraordinary because the manufacturing jobs are no longer there, and what's there is Walmart and McDonald's.
And this is why so many kids are dropping out of high school, because they're figuring, hey, you know, a high school degree means nothing, and I'm not going to be able to go to college. My family can't afford it, or maybe I can't handle it, you know, the book work. So to heck with it. And we've thrown away an entire generation.
No, well, I think that's an important point.
Bernie Sanders with us. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Saving the Constitution. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station.
If you had purchased gold 2 years ago, you would have seen a $10,000 investment be worth over $18,000 today. And the good news is that gold continues to be at only 40% of its previous high in 1980, considering inflation. And some experts predict gold could reach as high as $2,000 an ounce, which means investors could potentially turn a $10,000 investment into over $20,000. Now, every investment has risks, and past performance does not guarantee future returns. But you owe it to yourself to get a free consultation from the professionals at Blanchard. For over 30 years, Blanchard has helped people invest wisely in gold. In fact, Blanchard even gives you a buyback guarantee. So call for a free, no-obligation consultation on the coins that are positioned right now to give you solid returns. Gold American Eagles are guaranteed by the U.S. government for weight and purity, and Blanchard has an attractive radio offer for those who call today. So call 888-730-GOLD. That's 888-730-GOLD. Don't wait. Call 888-730-GOLD. 888-730-GOLD.
You know, the ones, fives, tens, twenties, fifties, and hundreds, that money is backed by what is called the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, the Federal Reserve.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I don't know about you, but I have no faith in this government. And as far as its credit rating, if the U.S. government were rated by one of these rating companies,
what would it be? Zero worth?
It's Mike Malloy.
I mean, how do you rate a nation that's $12 trillion in debt?
Evening, 8 to 11. AM 620 KDOJ. 620 KDOJ.
The King of Waltz is back. André Rieu and his Johann Strauss Orchestra are back for a new series of concerts with unforgettable melodies from musical operetta, but above all, with lots of world-famous waltzes. Experience André Rieu and the Johann Strauss Orchestra.
Live at the Rose Garden, Sunday, June 14th. Tickets are on sale now at ComcastTix.com.
Imagine being able to fill your palm with a rare piece of history. It's possible because the New York Mint has just issued an exclusive proof of the breathtaking $100 Union. Proposed by George T. Morgan, it was to be the largest U.S. coin ever in denomination, weight, and size. Now, in a rare offering, the New York Mint has announced the release of a limited quantity of $100 Union coins to the public. Struck in gleaming proof silver and sealed at the Mint, this $100 Union has never and will never be circulated. This coin will be offered for a limited time on a first-come, first-served basis by calling the New York Mint at 1-800-500-9551. This brilliant coin masterpiece fills the palm and the senses with weight and historical presence. To get your hands on this unique piece of history and receive a free collector's DVD, call the New York Mint directly. 1-800-500-9551. Quantities are limited. Call 1-800-500-9551.
If you see a boy who struggles to walk or climb stairs, you could be noticing symptoms of Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Duchenne is the most common lethal genetic disorder of childhood. If you suspect your son or a boy you know may have Duchenne muscular dystrophy, contact Parent Project Muscular Dystrophy to learn more. Treatments exist that can make a real difference. Why not become informed about what you can do?
You don't have to wait any longer. With Walmart's unbeatable prices, you can now upgrade to the phenomenal movie watching experience of Blu-ray. Samsung HD TVs and Sony Blu-ray players have never been more affordable. And The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor, rated PG-13, is coming on Blu-ray and DVD December 16th. So now you can bring Hollywood's biggest movies home in high definition. Save money, live better. Walmart. We will match the price of any local competitor's print ad for an identical product. See store for details.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
It's 17 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour, 866-303-2270. Our telephone number, sanders.senate.gov, is Bernie's website. Our live chat room, which I'm in, is at tomhartman.com. Our video feed today is down because I'm broadcasting from home rather than our studios over at Clear Channel KPOJ. So it's just audio feed today, with apologies. Bernie, ready to take some calls?
Let's do it.
All righty. Mark in Minneapolis, Minnesota. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. Listen, it sounds like you're going to get a fellow Minnesotan, Al Franken.
Well, I'm following that closely. Al is an old friend of mine. He's been to Vermont on a couple of occasions, and I certainly hope that he wins that recount. He will be a real asset to the U.S. Senate, a very, very smart guy.
Well, good. I want to paraphrase Senator Chuck Grassley, and you talked about what caused the problem. And he referred to the SEC as being either incompetent or corrupt. And we see another example of that with how they missed the Madoff scandal. But I just want to go back to, in 2005, the SEC had open investigations into both AIG, Bear Stearns, and Fannie Mae that they suddenly inexplicably stopped that could have averted the subprime crisis. Do you think the SEC, given its, you know, pandemic failures, should be investigated for incompetence or corruption?
You mean as one part of an overall investigation of the incompetence of the Bush administration, which will clearly go down in history as perhaps the most incompetent administration that we have ever had? The answer is the SEC has clearly failed. I think Chris Cox has even indicated that. But it's not just the Madoff scandal. Imagine a $50 billion Ponzi scheme and nobody picking up on it. But more significantly, how we were told year after year that our fundamentals of our economy were strong, things were going really well, and then suddenly out of nowhere, Mr. Paulson and Mr. Bernanke announced a few months ago, they said, oh, if we don't act immediately, the whole economy collapses. But this does speak to the absolute incompetence of the Bush administration. And it also deals with their concept of deregulation, their feeling that leave these big companies alone. We don't want to punish them. We don't want to regulate them. We don't want to investigate them. Trust these guys to do the right thing. And now we're spending hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars bailing them out because people were not looking over their shoulder and exposing their illegal activities.
James in New Paltz, New York. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Greetings, gentlemen. Tom, we're getting a foot of snow on the Hudson Valley, just to get your interest. Senator Sanders,
we're all in it together, James.
What?
We're
I want to give a shout out. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, we can hear you fine, James. Hello.
Okay. I just want to give a shout out to Senator Sanders. Your piece in the Huffington Post about the squander of the GAO report is incredible. I'm just upset and dismayed that the Times or the Washington Post or any major news outlet has not picked up on it. But I have a question and related to the auto bailout or the auto industry in general. Isn't there a relationship between our military and Detroit? A lot of our tanks, military hardware, are they not manufactured there? And if something happens to the American auto industry, will that not affect the military? And do we want Japan or Germany manufacturing our tanks and planes and jeeps?
James, you've asked a very, very important question. The first point that James was making, we recently requested with Chairman Reyes in the House a GAO investigation about the significant amount of waste that exists in the Navy where they are purchasing spare parts that they don't need. As of now, I think they're sitting on some $7 billion in spare parts, which they really don't need. Similar problems exist in the Air Force. We expect similar problems to exist in the Army. As a nation, we are spending $540 billion a year on military spending above and beyond Iraq and Afghanistan. This is a huge sum of money, and I have been very concerned that neither the House, the Senate, or the White House have taken a really hard look at the waste, the duplications, the fraud that exist within the military-industrial complex. So this is what we have done. It's kind of the tip of the iceberg, but I'll be working with other senators trying to get rid of a lot of the waste that exists in the military. James raises a very important question. And James says essentially that if Detroit goes down, if we lose our ability to produce vehicles in this country, what does that mean for, what does this mean in terms of the military? Isn't historically Detroit also producing tanks and other types of products, vehicles for the military? And the answer is yes, they certainly are. Tom and I have talked on this show for many years now about our real concern about the collapse of manufacturing in general in the United States, not just in terms of automobiles, the loss of good-paying jobs, and what it means, A, as a military power, B, as a serious economic world leader, if you are not producing the products that your people need. Can we really be a great economic power just doing derivatives on Wall Street or selling hamburgers? So I think, and Tom and I have talked about this many, many times, we have got to rebuild manufacturing in America. That's what makes a nation into a strong economic force. It creates good-paying jobs. And the decline of manufacturing in this country throughout disastrous trade policies and through other economic approaches has been very harmful to our nation and working people.
You're singing my song, Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, our Brunch with Bernie Hour here on the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from our house in Portland. And Bernie's in, are you in Vermont or Washington, D.C. today?
Bernie? I'm in Burlington, Vermont.
In Burlington, Vermont. It is 29 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. Stick around for more Brunch with Bernie here on the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Annoy Hannity. Listen to Hartman. Tom Hartman, nationwide. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
It's your radio support group for democracy in the United States of America. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. 1-866-303-2270. Our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. And let's see here. Drew in Reedboro, Vermont. Hey, Drew, you're on with your own senator.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. Listen, I tell you what, Bernie, I love you. I think you're probably the best senator. But I got to hold you guys. I got to say, you guys fail. The whole Congress, I mean, you know, you got Pat Leahy capitulating to Arlen Specter about the hearings to confirm Holder. I mean, once again, we learn that, oh, my God, Bush isn't doing what he's supposed to do. I mean, you guys roll over and let the Republicans run roughshod all over you guys. And now we got Nancy Pelosi telling Obama he better not pull any backdoor deals. I mean, where has she been for the last 2 years? I mean, you guys have been a complete failure protecting my tax dollars in terms of all of this crap. It's really gotten disgusting that you guys have not stood up to him. And Bernie, I mean, they need your vote. I mean, you can filibuster this stuff. You can say, no, I'm not going to go along with this. And if you can leave me on hold, I'm not in my car, so I'd like to hear the response.
Okay. Well, Drew, thanks for your thoughts, and I suspect there are millions of Americans who agree with you. The only thing, and I think you make a point, which I won't argue with. On the other hand, what I have to say to you is many people don't understand this. Drew, it takes 60 votes right now in the Senate to get anything done. The Republicans have waged more filibusters than at any time in this session than any time in history, as I understand it, some 95. Could the Democrats have been more aggressive? Could the Democrats have called their bluff and say, you want to filibuster this? Fine, we're going to be here 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, exposing you to the American people. I think they could have done a better job on that. So I won't disagree with you on that. But I do want you to understand the problem with the Democratic leadership here is they also have to accomplish something. And if they sit around and they filibuster and deal with an issue for a month, then nothing gets done. You don't have a budget. You don't have some things that we have, in fact, succeeded on. I would point out to you, among many other achievements, you know, the minimum wage was raised in the last 2 years. As high as we would like it? No. Is it something? Yeah, for low-wage workers, it's something. We passed the most significant increase in veterans' benefits since World War II. We essentially brought back the old GI education bill, which is going to make it possible for every soldier to get a quality education regardless of income. That's a big deal. We've raised funding for the VA. We have dealt somewhat with global warming. So bottom line is we have accomplished some things against enormous Republican opposition. Could we have been stronger? I think we could. The real challenge right now, Drew, if I may say so, is right now you're going to have a Democratic president. You're going to have a larger number of Democrats in the House and more Democrats in the Senate. And I think the American people have got to demand from the Democratic leadership now is no more excuses. Let us move this country forward boldly for the middle class and working families. Let's do it, and let's do it now. And there are no more excuses. So, Drew, I would hope that you and millions of other people at the grassroots level will make that demand, and let's see what we can do.
Sort of like Franklin Roosevelt saying, make me do it. Thanks a lot, Drew. JR in Vancouver, you're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Morning. I've got two quick comments, and I'd like to see if you can suggest a solution. Number one, the only thing that will be accomplished by the UAW workers losing income is their local economies will also lose income, and that's going to drastically affect them. There's no guarantee whatsoever that people are going to be able to buy automobiles unless the financial institution starts loaning money to people that have lower credit scores than over 700. And number two, I believe that this issue was created because of the financial institutions. They created a false sense of demand by putting money on the market that was not available. People can't afford what they're buying, and now the bill is due, and no one can pay it, so everything is crumbling.
Well, let's start off with the UAW. I think Tom and I agreed a moment ago that one of the things that we're seeing in this country right now, which is a horror show, it's the destruction of the middle class. It is the race to the bottom. And I can tell you that at the same time as very few people in the Senate had any problem with some of these guys who run hedge funds literally making billions of dollars in a relatively short period of time, where 30-year-old guys were making tens and tens of millions of dollars selling derivatives on Wall Street, no problem with that. Suddenly people said, what an outrage that an automobile worker can actually make $50,000 or $60,000 a year. What a terrible thing. We can't allow that to happen. And this is the race to the bottom. So it impacts not only the local economy, it impacts every worker in America. If you're involved in a race to the bottom, that means our wages are going down, they're not going up, and this is at the heart and soul of the collapse of the middle class. Second of all, JR raises the question of the cause of the problem, and making cheap money available, and so forth. All we can say, I mean, there are many, many causes to this problem, but I will tell you this. What I worry about very much about today compared to 1929 is today, not only are we seeing unemployment going up, we're seeing people deeply in debt, much more deeply in debt than was the case back in 1929, which gets me very, very worried. It's not only the people don't have any money, it's that they are deeply in debt. So we could be looking at some very, very serious problems.
Very, very well said. Let's see here. Sean in Vancouver, Washington. You're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Senator Sanders, would you agree that the two most important things we need to accomplish in the new administration would be, number one, repeal Taft-Hartley, and number two, get the Employee Free Choice Act signed? And I guess I'd also throw in there restore tariffs on countries who produce products and export them to us with bad environmental and labor standards. Just to
Sean,
get back up.
I'm sorry, Sean.
Sean raises very, very important issues. I don't know that, you know, the most immediately important issue we can do is get this economy back on its feet and pass a very significant stimulus package which puts millions of people to work. Sean raises the question of the Employee Free Choice Act, which is very important, something I very strongly support. Tom and I have talked for a very long time about the reasons that the middle class is in decline. And certainly one of the reasons has to do with the fact that millions of workers who want to be members of unions are not able to do so because the deck is stacked against them. Their employer can fire workers who are involved in union organizing activities. The National Labor Relations Board is extremely right-wing. The Employee Free Choice Act will make it easier for workers to join unions in a democratic way, and that is just terribly important for our whole economy and for working-class people. The second issue has to deal with our trade policies, and I agree with Sean absolutely. We currently have a trade deficit, which I believe is somewhere around $700 billion. This is Christmas time. Go to any of your local stores and see how many products you can make, you can buy, that are actually manufactured here in the United States of America. To my mind, we need to fundamentally change our trade policies. We need to demand that corporate America, who want us to buy their products, start producing some of these products here in America and pay workers a decent wage. So those are two very, very important issues, and I certainly agree with Sean on that.
Vic in Cedar Creek, Texas. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, Senator Sanders, General Motors just opened up two new plants, one in Russia, one in India in the past few months. They're doing quite well in those countries. They also are doing really well in China. Why didn't we, I guess we the people, you know, nobody knows that. Why didn't we compel them to build those cars here and then ship them overseas instead of hire workers over there and then cry about their poor performance in the United States?
Or if I can add to that, Vic, you know, those plants in Russia and India are for the domestic markets. They've also got a huge factory down in Brazil and I think one in Argentina that they use to sell cars into South America. But they, you know, Michael Moore's first movie, Roger and Me, was about GM shutting down five, as I recall, factories in Flint, Michigan, moving them down to Mexico and reopening them. That's, you know, there's an issue for you. Bernie?
Well, it's interesting that Vic raises that very important point. Vic, about a year ago or so, the Senate met with the leadership of the Big Three. We had the Big Three guys there, and the UAW was there. And I asked the Big Three, my question was, in how many years do you think you'd be shutting down virtually all of your plants in the United States and moving to China, producing your cars and then bringing them back into this country? And I thought they would stand up, oh, no, don't be silly, that'll never happen. But, you know, they weren't so vehement in what they had to say. So when we look at what's going on in automobile manufacturing, you're absolutely right. There has been a significant decline in the number of good jobs in this country. They're opening up plants all over the world. And what I worry about very, very much is the construction of major plants in China, where wages are far lower, and bringing those cars into this country at costs that would be much lower than even the Japanese can do. So it is a big issue. And again, the question is, as a nation, this gets right into our whole international trade policy. It gets into globalization. We are losing millions of good-paying blue-collar jobs. We are losing now millions of white-collar jobs, which are going to India and to Russia. And how do you sustain a middle class if we don't have those jobs? So those are the very, very big questions that have got to be asked in the coming months and years.
Caller a couple days ago, Bernie, who called his bank, one of the banks that got the bailouts, called about his credit card, was connected to somebody in India. It's absolutely incredible. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Brunch with Bernie here on the Tom Hartman program, taking your calls at 866-303-2270. TomHartman.com also for our free live chat room. We'll be right back.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Truth is his weapon. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Our online lives are even more vulnerable than our real lives, especially when it comes to the nightmare of identity theft.
I call the year after I got my identity stolen my lost year. Every day, another phone call to a bank, the DMV, credit card companies, it's like I had a second job.
Don't become a victim. Get Identity Guard Total Protection with ID Vault. Protect yourself with patented internet scanning technology that alerts you of potential identity theft. And with ID Vault, lets you make your passwords, screen names, and credit card numbers virtually impossible to steal when you're online. Identity Guard Total Protection with ID Vault. Serious 21st century stuff for 21st century crime. Get total protection. Call 877-600-2669. Sign up now and get Identity Guard Total Protection with ID Vault free for 30 days. Just pay shipping and handling. Call 877-600-2669 today. That's 877-600-2669 or visit identityguard.com.
Are you waking up with Carl Wolfson and friends?
These are less popular suggestions. Abraham Lincoln.
6 to 9.
The Obama's first dog. What name it could be?
Promise. Because he promised the girls and he promised us.
Elephant eater.
How about lipstick?
How about rogue?
You've got to have southpaw. I'd like to give it a local name and name it Mutt Safino, the weather dog.
It's Carl Wolfson.
As Abraham Lincoln said.
Morning 6 to 9.
AM 620 KPOJ.
Portland's only progressive talk station.
Love rocks this December at Zales. All month long, find extraordinary values on the jewelry that she wants most. Thousands of new and exclusive styles all throughout the store, like our diamond bracelet collection from $179 up to $2,799. There's no better way to say I love you, and no better time than now to find these last-minute gifts. Hurry in during our holiday event and make this a year to remember with Zales, America's diamond store and value leader since 1924.
IBM Express Advantage.
Yeah, hi. I run an animation company, and we're working on a new short, Neotropics, but we have server space issues.
You did that? Oh, I loved the first one.
Yeah, the problem is we sucked up our storage space, and our IT area looks like a jungle. I mean, I'll design jungles, but I don't want to work in one.
Oh, you need to simplify.
We need to find Rusty.
Rusty?
Yeah, our star, the robotic monkey. This time he's lost in a cable jungle.
Oh. Well, the Blade Center S Express is all in one, server storage and networking, that plugs into a regular power outlet.
Efficient.
Yep, energy efficient and space efficient. You can set it up anywhere in 30 minutes.
Okay, so we save energy, space, time, and Rusty?
Yep. Hey, you know, I got this idea for a story.
That's great. Just help me find an IBM business partner, please.
You got it.
IBM Blade Center S Express helps support IT needs for mid-sized companies. Go to IBM.com/IBM Access or call the concierge at 877-IBM-ACCESS to find the business partner that's right for you.
Hi, this is Tom Dwyer, 230-2300. Hey, don't be lulled by these short-term gas prices. While we experience this temporary period of cheaper gas, remember what $4 and $5 gas feels like. Dwindling oil resources and corporate greed, the causes of high fuel prices, have not changed. You can trust the oil companies to do one thing, make profit. The oil industry spends more money advertising they're green than actually being green. Executive compensation and advertising spending far exceeds their actual budget for alternatives. Oil is a finite resource, and we're sucking off the bottom of the tank. Not familiar with the term peak oil? Then it's time to learn. What are we willing and able to do for transportation in the future? Tom Dwyer Automotive Services is committed to helping you make your transportation as sustainable as possible, whether it's keeping your vehicle running at its best, converting it to ethanol or biodiesel, or helping you with a decision about moving to hybrids or full electrics, we can help. We'd like to earn your trust and welcome you as a valued client. Please check the detailed video testimonials on our website at tomdwyer.com or just call us at 503-230-2300.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. By the way, the next hour we're going to have Ravi Batra, the professor of economics at Southern Methodist University, regular on the show. I think one of America's most brilliant economists, the author of the book Greenspan's Fraud. Stick around. That's going to be a good one, too. Bernie, back to the phone calls.
Okay.
Okay. David in Central Idaho. You're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi. Hi, my name is David. I just want to throw some sunshine out on the whole thing that we do have a product that's really made in America. And every time you get on a commercial Boeing airliner, It's the best in the world. It's made all in the United States. They moved their headquarters to Chicago, Illinois, which is not Dubai. And
make the tail assemblies in China now for the Boeing planes.
But I'm sure the unions are really heavy in Seattle, and they're still making most of it in Seattle, and it's a Seattle corporation. And their corporation headquarters is in Chicago.
Well, that is good to hear. And obviously, there are many products and many strong companies in the United States. But the fight that we have right now is to stop corporate America from destroying our manufacturing center, moving to third world countries, paying people low wages, and then bringing these products right back into this country. That whole trend is doing devastating harm to the working class of this country. And that's a major issue which, frankly, has not been discussed enough. So it's not just permanent normal trade relations with China. It's not just NAFTA. It has to do with the WTO. It has to do with how you develop trade policies which work for working families and not just for large CEOs, for the CEOs of large companies, which certainly has been the case for decades right now.
Alex in Palm Desert, California. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi. Hey, congratulations to all you guys do, and thanks from everybody out here. Senator Sanders, this is a follow-up on your constituent from Vermont and the Democrats basically in Congress seemingly caving in on everything. This has to do specifically with Harry Reid. Is there any way, any mechanism that he can be replaced by somebody with a lot more fire? I mean, you would be ideal, even though you're an independent. But there's a bunch of us out here who would love to see that happen. So, I mean, Waxman did it with Dingell. Is it possible at all to get Harry Reid out of there and somebody with a little more fire? Thanks.
Well, thanks, Alex. Let me tell you, first of all, thank you, Alex. It will not be me, that's for sure. I think that Harry Reid may not have fire, but Harry Reid has a very, very difficult job. And that is he has got to put together in one room people like myself, Barbara Boxer, and other progressives, along with some very, very conservative people. So it's easy to blame Harry, but I think what you have to look at who's in the Senate and the fact that he has got to put together a coalition of some pretty conservative people along with some quite progressive people. But I think the issue that we've got to focus on right now, Alex, is what is a progressive agenda? How do we achieve it? How do we demand that the Congress and the President pass it? Understanding that every step of the way we will be opposed by big money interests who have enormous power. But we can do it, and we've got to do it. This country has got to have join the rest of the industrialized world and have a national health care program guaranteeing health care to all people. And you know what? That doesn't cost us any more money than the enormous amount that we're currently spending in a wasteful and bureaucratic system. We've talked today over and over again about the need to change our trade policies. We have got to make sure that we have an early education program for kids. You've got millions of kids today who are getting off to a terrible start because they don't have the adequate child care that they need. We have millions of middle-class families having a very difficult time sending their kids to college. How do we create good-paying jobs, breaking our dependency on foreign oil and moving to sustainable energy? How do we end the war in Iraq, bring our troops home as soon as possible, figure out what the right thing to do in Afghanistan, and create a different picture for us in the international community so that we are leaders in the effort for world peace, not simply the largest military power on earth. So there's an enormous amount of issues out there, primarily restoring the middle class, growing the middle class, lowering poverty, dealing with this great gap between the rich and everybody else. A lot of work out there. We need to fight for a progressive agenda, and we need to put as much pressure as we can on Congress because the opposition out there, whether it's Wall Street, military-industrial complex, drug companies, insurance companies, is just enormous.
Cass in Phoenix, Arizona. You're on with Senator Bernie Sanders. Hey, Cass. Hello? Okay, Renee in Camas, Washington. You're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you. I'm a realtor and have been a realtor for over 15 years in the United States here, specifically Clark County. No one has addressed the subculture of realtors and what is happening in our industry. Everything has been focused on subprime mortgages, people that are losing their houses, which is a very severe problem. But nobody has addressed in the Congress or anything else that whole category of professional people that are losing their jobs, and they're being impacted nationally as far as trying to pay bills and all the accoutrement that goes along with just daily living.
So,
has
Renee,
anybody thought about maybe focusing on that a little bit? I mean, I don't know how you can regroup after 15 years of being in an industry.
Well, I think what Renee is saying is obviously there have been a lot of focus on foreclosures and lower and the housing market plummeting, but maybe we're not paying attention to the people who are in that industry and what's happening to them. I think, Renee, the simple and straightforward answer is that we can revitalize housing in this country if we can create a situation where people can afford to buy houses and keep their houses. You're going to create an industry which is vibrant, and people will be able to have jobs within that industry.
And get access to credit, and the banks don't seem to be doing that with the $350 billion they've gotten so far.
Well, that's exactly right, and that is why I voted against that bailout and why we're going to fight very hard to make sure that we don't have another bailout without very strong conditions.
There you go. Senator Bernie Sanders, Brunch with Bernie. It's sanders.senate.gov is his website. Bernie, thanks so much for being with us today.
Good to be with you, Tom.
It's always great to have you on. And coming up next, Dr. Ravi Batra. RaviBatra.com, his website. We'll be right back. Stick around. Tom Hartman with you on Anything Goes Friday.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club. Providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live from 100 feet offshore on top of 30 feet of water in Portland, Oregon. And Dr. Ravi Batra is with us, the professor of economics at Southern Methodist University, author of The New Golden Age and Greenspan's Fraud. And his website, check out his website, Ravi, R-A-V-I, Batra, BATRA.com. Dr. Ravi Batra, welcome. By the way, congratulations on a great article, a great profile of you in the Dallas-Fort Worth newspaper.
Yeah, that was very good. Thanks a lot for putting in some nice words for me, Tom.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I mean, it's simply the truth. You're one of the smartest and most prescient economists in this country. I think of you as this generation's John Maynard Keynes.
Well,
and I just, you know, I wish that you were on Obama's I wish you were a Secretary of the Treasury. But, you know.
Well, you know, this is the way things go, that even after FDR was elected, for a while, old ideology still kept raising its ugly head.
Well, his first official act of office was to cut back on pensions to widows and orphans from World War One.
I know, it's just crazy. So it's a learning experience for any new president. They will try the old policies because, you know, the trouble is if they don't do that, this Wall Street will hit them on their head. That's the trouble, you know.
Yeah.
If Obama was to start making wholesale changes and reforms, Wall Street people will jump on him, and there will be even. So we have to give him time, essentially, and they will learn by experience. Then, when things are not working and he tries something new, then Wall Street will say, okay, let's do something new.
As they did in 1933, 34 and 35, ultimately, is how long it took to really get things
and
going.
Then things started to improve. But this is the sad part of it, is that the old ideas do not die so soon, even when they have created a crisis.
Yeah. Ravi, I'm curious your thoughts on Bush's announcement today that there's really two things. Number one, Mr. Paulson is asking for another $350 billion in TARP money so that he can throw more money at the banks right after the Department of the Treasury refused to go along with the Freedom of Information Act filing by one of the news agencies asking for where did this money go? What's going on? Congress is trying to find out. They don't seem to have a clue. And it looks like they're probably going to be stampeded into this all over again. And also George Bush saying, yeah, okay, we'll loan $14 billion and change to the auto companies, but you know, by the end of next year, we want to make sure that their wage and compensation package is identical to workers at a Hyundai factory in Alabama.
See, this is the problem with all these old ideas. They think that low wages are great for the economy, and high pay for executives is fine. And along with that, you need low wages. And that's the problem. The problems are wages are too low relative to productivity. And this old idea that, you know, we have to stay competitive with the likes of workers in China and other low-paid countries, and that's great for our living standard, that is such a nonsense. And this is what brought about this entire crisis to begin with. The crisis is wages are too low relative to productivity. And now the conditions of this auto bailout are that we will have even lower wages in the auto industry, and then there will be many layoffs at the same time. And I thought the whole purpose of this bailout, all this money, is to avoid layoffs in that industry. So I don't understand what they're doing.
Well, it's, you know, Bush is, on the one hand, he doesn't want to go down in history as the guy who threw 3 million people out of work the week before Christmas in his at the end of his presidency. I mean, that would be the ultimate Hooverville kind of thing. On the other hand, he does want to drive down those wages because, like you said, these guys actually believe that if wages are low on working people and if taxes are low on rich people, then that produces a good economy. This is a belief system that has been adopted in this country, frankly, by pretty much everybody since Reagan came into power.
That's right. And
since we've seen before Reagan, those of us who are old enough remember, before Reagan came into power, most newspapers in the United States had labor pages as well as business pages. There was labor news. People knew what wages were. And whenever a union was negotiating a contract, everybody knew what was going on. And it was a big subject of discussion. Now you watch the news and all you hear is what the stock market's doing. That's not the economy.
Well, talking about these taxes that you just the discussion you started about taxes, talking about them, you know, this CEO crowd hates taxes, especially the income tax, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these are the same people who are first in line for the taxpayer handout right now.
Right.
Isn't
right.
it amazing? They hate taxes. They hate to pay taxes. Now they're in the first in line to get the taxpayer handout. This is just these are contradictions in the policy, so glaring contradictions. And then all we are doing, Mr. Bernanke and this bailout business are asking for another $350 billion. We are providing help to the banks and then complaining at the same time that banks are still not lending money to the people. Now, there is another contradiction in this complaint itself. We all know that people have low wages and they are not able to service their mortgages. They're not even able to pay back their old loans. How can you then expect the banks to extend more loans?
Yeah,
that's
my and for that matter, local economies even to remain vital as wages continue to decline, as these auto workers, as their wages go down. Yeah, there may be some additional short term profits to the CEOs of the auto companies, and they're all thinking short term because they're all compensated with stock nowadays. But the local community, people are going to be buying less food at the local food store. They're going to be renting fewer movies at the local movie store, going to fewer movies at the local theater. They're gonna buy fewer toys at the local toy store, you know, fill in the blanks, and slowly the economy of this country is going to be strangled, and has been, frankly, since we've seen wages steadily collapse ever since Ronald Reagan came into office.
Well, exactly, and this is by the way, what happened in the soon after the stock market crash in 1929. You know, 1930 itself was a fairly reasonable year. Yes, the unemployment had risen, stock market was low, but things had stabilized. Mm-hmm. Then the economists recommended wage cuts.
Right.
This is what they recommended in 1930. There should be wage cuts so that employers would find it profitable to hire these workers. And they don't realize that when you have wage cuts, there's also a cut in total demand. People don't buy things enough. And so employers, nobody will hire anybody if they can't sell what they're producing. So they started to cut wages in 1930, 31, and, you know, that recession, which was still a recession in 1930, turned into a mega depression in 31 and 32. So these guys don't realize the importance of maintaining high wages relative to productivity. See, I'm not just saying wages should be high. Since productivity is extremely high, and high productivity means high supply, high production, who is going to buy all this production if wages are low? But the answer to the answer of the administration and Mr. Bernanke, along with Greenspan, was and is that make them borrow money, lure them into borrowing money. Now, and they kept following that policy. And when people borrowed money, they bought other goods. But now people just don't have the capacity to borrow, and banks also don't want to lend money. Because they are not being paid back on their past loans. And here Congress and economists and the administration are complaining that the banks are not lending any more money. Why should the bank lend any more money if they're not being paid back on past loans? This is whole insane, really.
Yeah, it is. And it's a downward spiral that, in my opinion, can only be reversed if we reverse the downward trend in wages.
This is the only way, and actually, you mentioned about that article that came out in Fort Worth Financial Weekly. Mm-hmm. They have mentioned my four steps. I've offered four steps, 4-point
let's
plan.
Let's cover those when we come back from the break, Ravi.
Okay,
we're talking to Dr. Ravi Batra, and I hope you get a link to that article up on your website. At RobbieBatra.com.
Yeah, I will do that pretty soon.
Great.
Once my son comes in, he'll do
it. Okay. I'm working from home today, so it's going to take us a little more time to get it on our website, but we will also. We'll get it over at TomHartmann.com within the next 24 hours. Dr. Ravi Batra with us. Stick around. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Blindingly logical. Tom Hartmann, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Hi, Tom Hartmann here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
Ed Schultz.
The biggest story on the face of this earth is America. What do you really think of your workers?
Noon to 3.
The partisan divide is alive and well. The attack on the working folk of America is now in full gear. What's the difference between the governor of Illinois selling off a Senate seat?
The Ed Schultz Show.
And some southern Republican senator protecting his backside for the next election.
Noon to 3.
By cutting the head off American auto manufacturer.
AM 620 KPOJ.
If you could increase the effectiveness of your brain, would you do it? If you could discover an easy way to make your brain smarter, stronger, and faster for absolutely no cost at all, would you do it? Well, now you can by requesting a powerful free demo of IQ from Infinite Mind. Right now, when you call, we'll send you an absolutely free demo showing you how easy it is to increase your brain power in as little as 7 minutes. It's called IQ, and it will unleash your mind. Not only that, but you'll be able to read up to 1,000% faster, allowing you to read 10 books in the time it takes others to read one. To increase the effectiveness of your brain in 7 minutes for free, call 1-800-500-3112. What have you got to lose? It only takes 7 minutes. It increases the speed and efficiency of your brain, and you can try it out absolutely free. Call now to get your free demo. Call IQ at 1-800-500-3112. That's 1-800-500-3112.
How to stuff a stocking with a new deck. Step 1. Simply insert a Home Depot gift card into a family member's stocking. Step 2. Brace yourself for a great big hug.
Hurry in for a meaningful last-minute gift that'll really deck their halls. A gift card from the Home Depot. From transforming a room with new paint to a beautiful spring rose garden, a gift card lets them choose exactly what they want. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help.
This holiday season, give the most eternal, unique gift of the year. Name a star after someone. I'm Rocky Moselle with International Star Registry. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com, we'll name a star after anyone on your gift list. The star name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office, and we will send an incredible personalized gift package. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333, or visit starregistry.com for the gift that shines forever.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Crow, cancer survivor. If you want to know where the leading cancer research is being done, check out City of Hope Cancer Center. New drugs, new treatments that are saving lives everywhere. For information, go to CherylCrowForHope.org.
Stumped for gift ideas? Give the gift of style and safety. A Les Schwab Tire Center's gift certificate. Tires, wheels, batteries, for whatever you drive. Les Schwab gift certificates, only at Les Schwab.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Dr. Robbie Batra with us, professor of economics at Southern Methodist University, the author of numerous books, including The New Golden Age. And the subtitle for The New Golden Age, Robbie, is about political corruption and... Robbie?
Yeah. Okay. The New Golden Age, The Coming Revolution Against Political Corruption and Economic Chaos.
There you go.
By the way...
Yes, sir.
The paperback edition of this book is... about to come out within 2-3 days. Mm. And in that, you know, there have been a lot of questions about how to buy gold and foreign currencies even when the price has gone up. So I have offered some suggestions in this new edition of this book, which is a paperback edition also, which is cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
And so suggestions about how to buy gold and foreign currencies and on my comments about the bailout and what things have happened since.
Right, so it's new and updated. So right. your 4 points that you were suggesting about how to get this economy back on track.
Well, the first thing we just talked about was we should raise the minimum wage about $1 per hour every year until it hits $10 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And then we should index it with inflation. That's the first thing I would do.
Mm-hmm.
As the minimum wage goes up, all other wages will rise.
Right.
That's one thing I would do. The second thing, instead of increasing government spending on the bailouts of Wall Street and banks and so on, they should increase government wages. They're going to increase government spending anyway. Wages of the government employees should go up maybe about 10% this year, and slowly they should rise until... We catch up with everybody's higher productivity. By the way, recently, I think last month, China announced a rise in the wages of government employees by 10%. And I think we should do the same thing. And they understand the importance of domestic demand.
Exactly. So you're suggesting that by raising the wages of government employees, you're going to accomplish two things. Number one, you're setting a new benchmark for the cost of labor. So across because government employees constitute what, between a quarter and a third of all the workers, directly or indirectly.
Yeah.
And secondly, you're going to put a lot of money in the pockets of working people who spend 100% of that money or close to it, and that's going to increase demand for products, which is going to revive the economy.
Right. And see, and then the important point here is, and this point actually was first made by Milton Friedman, you know, the one who
yeah, the bad guy.
Yeah, right. He first said that people don't spend much money out of a temporary rise in income, which is what will happen when they cut the taxes.
Mm-hmm.
But from a permanent rise in income, people spend a lot of money. So if you raise their wages, that people will look at as a permanent rise in income. So there will be a big increase in consumer demand out of increased wages.
Right.
Whereas if you cut taxes, then there may be some rise in demand, but not much. So not as much, at least.
Right. And on the high end, for people who earn more than they spend and thus save it, cutting taxes doesn't increase demand at all because they just stash
that
away.
That's right. You're right about that. Right. And then if the wages go up, it really instills a lot of confidence in your outlook towards the economy.
Mm-hmm.
You see, okay, the economy is depressed, but now I'm doing better, so you spend more. And that's what we need. We have too much supply, not enough demand, and they are busy trying to raise demand through government, these bailouts of the banks. And banks are saying, well, fine, give us the money, but we're not going to lend anymore because we are not being, our past loans are not being repaid right now. So that policy, you're creating more deficit, but it's not helping the economy. And, the funny part is the policy has failed for the past 2 years, and still they are repeating it.
Yeah, yeah. So point number three.
Yeah, okay. So those are the two points. And then point number three, excuse me, I would do something real about our trade deficit that we have to really start reducing sharply, because if we don't do that, every other mayor is going to have limited success. This trade deficit is killing our manufacturing base. All the problems we have from the auto manufacturer disappearing is because of the trade deficit.
So can we do that by what? Increasing, going back to a tariff-based trade system?
Well, if we do tariffs, then they are going to have, again, Wall Street is going to jump on them. And
right.
That will perhaps initially cause a stock market loss, and the worldwide confidence will go down. So I don't recommend tariffs right now.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, maybe, but not right now.
Talk to you later, please.
Yes.
So later on, we can do that if things don't work.
So what
out.
Do we do right now to correct the trade imbalance?
What I will suggest now is that we should fix the value of the dollar at low levels with respect to Japanese currency, Chinese currency, and the euro.
Won't China just track us? I mean, that's what they've been doing for the last decade.
They will do that, but then we can fix it back later. You know, the thing is lower, even lower. See, they have it fixed. And we
you're saying that over the short-term monetary policy, over the long-term trade policy, as your third
point. Well, I think the trade deficit... if we are on a horizon for at least next 6 months,
Robbie, can you stick around for one more segment?
Sure.
Okay, great. And we'll pick up a few phone calls for you, too, and then you can get to your fourth point. Dr. Ravi Batra with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Yeehaw is not a foreign policy. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
On the fifth day of Bushmas, my president gave to me a stop to the START treaty so we could be legal building Star Wars 2 to defend our lack of a democracy. On the sixth day of Bushmas, my president gave to me stock market tips to replace Social Security. On the seventh day of Bushmas, my president gave to me faith-based initiatives to replace Social Security. On the eighth day of Bushmas, my president gave to me drills for the Arctic, water laced with arsenic. Oil won't mix with water, but oil and government oughta in a centrifuge, which we'll set up in a wildlife refuge. On the ninth day of Bushmas, my president gave to me a Bill of Rights, not for gays or blacks or free speech, not for none of these, but for health insurance companies.
Yes, the days of Bushmas, they're rapidly leaving, and what a relief it is. Dr. Ravi Batra with us. RaviBatra.com is website. And Ravi, you went through your first 3 points. You said raise the minimum wage by $1 an hour or $1 an hour per year until it reaches $10 and indexed it to inflation, number one. Number two, raise government wages. China just did this by 10% last year, and it increased demand. Number three, fix the trade deficit initially through monetary policy, over long term by trade policy. My words, not yours, and all of these. Yeah, but I think I'm getting your essence. And your fourth point, and correct me on any of the three if I got them wrong. And then let's pick up a couple of phone calls here, and then I've got another guest coming at the 45 break.
Okay. The fourth point is that we should, instead of bailing out the auto industry, buy the stock and sell the stock to the workers. And at the same time, the government can assume a part of those legacy costs so that to the level of the costs that the foreign transplants have, like Toyota and Honda and so on. So in terms of legacy costs, our domestic auto industry has the same cost structure as the foreign transplants, and then at the same time, they control the ownership of the company, and then they will be very motivated to do it. So this will cost a lot less, and we'll have a plan for chance of success. Whereas the current system, in which the failed management has made such a huge mess, and now they're being rewarded with a lot of money, and the workers have to either laid off or pay back their bonuses or wages is not going to be a good plan. This current
now, I would add to that, and tell me if you think this is wise or not, to immediately institute something close to a single-payer national health care program so that we are not only domestically state-by-state competitive. In other words, so not only is the Toyota plant in Tennessee or whatever the company is in Tennessee competitive with GM in Detroit, in terms of the biggest part of the legacy cost being health care, not only because the pensions, by and large, were paid into by the workers over the years. So, A, it does that within the country, but also it equalizes us with countries like Canada, which has a national health care program, so we're competitive internationally.
Yeah, it's a very good idea, and I think in my book I have mentioned it, that we need to have a national health care plan, not of the kind that Hillary Clinton was offering. One where we have a single payer, like the government is in charge of, like the Canadian plan. That's essentially what
Medicare
it is.
For all. Medicare for all.
Right.
Okay, let's pick up a few phone calls here. Mike in Fort Worth, Texas has a question for you, Ravi. Mike, you're on the air.
Hey, how y'all doing today?
Good.
Listen, I have a huge, huge concern about our economy and the way it is going. Essentially, the Republican Party took a bath in the last election. What real incentive do they have to make the economy do good over the next couple of years?
Good question. If the Republicans can make things worse, they can make the Democrats look bad.
What should they do to improve the economy?
No, his point is that the Republicans are now out of power. So if they can sabotage the Democrats and prevent them from having any success in improving the economy, they make the Democrats look bad and they might get back into power.
Well, they should remember what happened to the Republicans in the 1930s.
When they did exactly what I just described, what Mike just described.
For 20 years, they were out of power, so...
Yeah.
That should be incentive enough to cooperate.
Hopefully. Beth in Minneapolis, you're on with Dr. Ravi Batra.
Thank you, Tom. Dr. Batra, first of all, I want to say that I have written to Obama's campaign at the change.gov website several times mentioning you, your website, your books, and I write to other people in Congress and the media about you. And I hope sooner or later, you know, if enough of us do that, it will get more traction and we will hear more from you in wider media. But I wonder, do you happen to know, sir, if the Democrats are aware of what you're suggesting, if they are aware that wages need to be higher, and who would you recommend that we contact to send links to your article?
Thank you. Thank you. But I mean, this is my biggest rant, Robbie, is that I would say somewhere between a third and two thirds of all the Democrats in the House of Representatives and the Senate are still believing the Reaganomics mantra that, oh, well, in a recession, you can't raise taxes. In a recession, you can't raise wages. You've got to, you know, corporate profits will go in the tank and things will just get worse, et cetera.
Well, this is that's the trouble. They only look at wages in isolation. They should look at wages versus productivity, because productivity has gone up increasingly, has
right.
gone up sharply.
Right, and productivity is supply in the supply-demand equation.
There's no supply. Supply has gone up, but there's not increase in demand. And they're trying to raise demand by increasing lending, and people don't have the capacity to borrow anymore. And banks don't want to lend, so that's going to fail.
Yeah. So how do we wake up the Democrats to this? Any suggestions? Robbie?
Yeah, so about... Actually, by the way, I think you, because of your recommendation, I did talk to Senator, is it Bernie Sanders?
Yeah,
I did talk to their office.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I did talk to their office. I sent them my articles, and they are aware of my positions now.
That's great.
So maybe once they have tried their own ideas, they will talk to me about that.
Bernie's a great guy. I mean, he's on every Friday for an hour on this show, and
oh,
in fact,
okay.
We were just talking to him, so that's great that you've connected with him.
But next time you discuss with him the article I sent to him
yeah.
and his team.
So we need to get more Democrats to be. But you know, really, what you're saying is not just Batraism. I mean, it's John Maynard Keynes was saying these same things. Franklin Roosevelt came around to this. Virtually all the Democrats in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, and 60s understood. This John Kennedy certainly understood this. It's like we've had this collective amnesia since Ronald Reagan was elected president. Our labor pages no longer exist in our newspapers. We've become clueless about how the economy really works.
That's the whole point. This is essentially Greenspan's economics. Just
yeah.
look at productivity and don't worry about wages. High productivity means high living standards. That is simply nonsense. By the way, I think free trade is highly responsible for our current recession, and if free trade could convert it into a depression. Because what free trade does is it raises productivity, and that's what the economists like to talk about. But at the same time, it depresses wages, so it has double problems for our economy, raising supply, cutting demand. To try to fill that demand through loans, that's not working anymore.
Exactly. Rudy in San Antonio, Texas. You're on with Dr. Ravi Batra.
Hey, thanks, Tom. Dr. Batra, I have a question. I agree that what's happened to wages in this country is appalling, and I really like your 4 points. But my question is that we as a society have become addicted to low-cost consumer goods, and what happens, and how do we wean the country off of that if we raise wages and adjust our trade policy such that, you know, the cost of products will then go up as wages go up. But, you know, we're addicted to these low-cost consumer products.
Well, see, we are addicted to low-cost consumer products because our wages are low. With these policies, what will happen is wages will rise faster than prices.
Because
so
labor is only 10%. Yeah, labor is only 10% of the cost of a car. So, you know, if I'm making 10% more money, the cost of everything is going to go up, but it's not going to go up by 10%. It's going to go up by 1%.
Yeah, that's right. The wages will rise faster than prices. And look at America's history. We had very high tariffs throughout the 20th century or the 19th century. And we became the world's industrial power. We had the highest living standard. So tariffs don't kill an economy. Low wages kill an economy.
Amen. Mike in Mammoth, Illinois. Hey, Mike, we just have a minute here left.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm in kind of a time warp. Your show's not on yet, so I had to call in early.
Okay.
My issue is I haven't heard anything about a class action lawsuit against the banks and mortgage companies because they received hundreds of billions of taxpayer funds with the implied mandate that they were going to do something to stop the foreclosure slide, which nothing has happened, even in spite of the laws and bills that have been
passed. You're right, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mike, but we only have 20 seconds left. I'd like to get a response from Ravi on it. Good point. Excellent.
Well, I guess somebody should do that, but really I don't have any comment, any thought about this. I haven't thought about that.
But it does need to be exposed, is
yeah,
it not?
Yeah,
it's an insane policy to simply say we're gonna come in with a helicopter and drop cash on the top of the skyscrapers and expect that somehow it's going to filter down to the people working on the street. I mean, it's just nuts. Dr. Ravi Batra, Ravi, R-A-V-I-B-A-T-R-A is his website. His new book, The New Golden Age, is out in paperback. Check it out. Dr. Batra, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks a lot.
Good talking with you.
Bye.
Stick around. We'll be right back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. And coming up next is Sarah Rosenwortel.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
What would Hartman do? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
She's loud, she's proud, and she definitely draws a crowd.
If he had gotten into politics to steal, he certainly picked the wrong time because we're broke.
Randy Rhodes.
There's nothing left to steal. You know, why are they asking, is he crazy? Just look at his hair. What's on the outside is pretty good indication of what he's thinking on the inside.
The Randy Rhodes Show.
He actually considered appointing himself to the Senate seat because he was afraid that he had sucked every corrupt dollar out of Illinois, so he wanted to go national.
3 to 6 on AM 620 KPOJ.
This Christmas, enhance her entire wardrobe with an affordable gift of diamond hoop earrings from Shane Company. One of my favorite styles has 20 sparkling round diamonds for only $195. She can wear them alone or slide on a pair of our new danglers to create yet a whole new look. For a little more money, our pearl, ruby, or sapphire danglers make a great second gift. It's like getting two pair of earrings for what other jewelers charge for just one. Our diamond hoops and danglers are made with high-quality gemstones and 14-karat gold. Don't pay more elsewhere for cloudy diamonds, phony gemstones, or inferior 10-karat. Get genuine natural diamond hoop earrings for only $195 at Shane Company.
Now you have a friend in the diamond business, Shane Company, off Highway 217 across from the Washington Square Mall. Open weekdays till 8, Saturday and Sunday till 5, online at ShaneCo.com.
Hey, Carl Wolfson from The Morning Show. As we approach the end of the year, be sure to take advantage of your health insurance plan. If you haven't been to the optometrist this year to have your vision checked, call Eyes on Broadway to schedule an appointment before your 2008 benefits expire. Many insurance plans offer generous contributions toward the purchase of contacts or eyeglasses, but if you don't use it, you'll lose it. Make an appointment today by calling 503-284-2300 or visit EyesOnBroadway.com.
Bring the holidays home. Choose local. It's more important than ever to support our local economy. The Sustainable Business Network of Portland encourages you to choose locally owned businesses this holiday season, like Paloma Clothing, a locally owned women's clothing and accessory store located in the Hillsdale Shopping Center. When you choose locally owned businesses like Paloma Clothing, more money recirculates in our economy, more jobs are created, and you preserve the quality of our neighborhoods. For a list of locally owned businesses, go to sbnportland.org. And remember, choose local this holiday season. Did you know there's a TV and computer manufacturer headquartered right here in Portland, and they have an outlet store?
Really? In Portland?
You can get great deals on open box floor models, factory reconditioned products with warranty, and discontinued items with clearance pricing. Like a factory refurbished 37-inch 1080p LCD TV, they sell for $8.99 new, but at the Nexus Factory Outlet, you can get one for just $3.99. Go to NexusFactoryOutlet.com to check it out.
NexusFactoryOutlet.com for the best deals on flat screens and computers? Thanks.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Nine and a half minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Sarah Rosen-Wortel served in the White House in the Clinton administration after spending the first term at the Department of Housing and Urban Development as Deputy Assistant to the President for Economic Policy and Deputy Director of the National Economic Council. She advised the President on banking, government insurance and financial matters, housing and community development, consumer protection, pensions, bankruptcy, e-commerce, and a host of other economic issues. She is the author of a segment of a section of Mark Green's new book, the book that Mark Green edited, Change for America, Progressive Blueprint for the 44th President, a series of chapters by some really brilliant thinkers on what Barack Obama could or should be seriously thinking about doing as we move forward. The piece that she wrote, co-authored with John Podesta, Managing the White House for a Successful Presidency and National Economic Council. She is also currently the acting CEO for the Center for American Progress and Executive Vice President for Management of the Center for American Progress. Sarah Wortel, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Tom. Great to be with you.
What's your best advice to Barack Obama as he hits the ground running here in the big picture context? And then I want to get into the economic picture context from your perspective.
Well, I think what both of the chapters that I helped to put together say is that sometimes management counts, and the challenges in front of this president, this administration, are so enormous it's almost hard to contemplate. And you've got brilliant people working for you. You have people dedicated and committed, but you want to use their time and their energies in the most effective way possible. And having clear processes and responsibilities is enormously important. You want to have deliberation, and then at the end of the deliberation, you want a decision and ability to execute it, and you need to organize people to get things done.
Is it, and maybe naive is the wrong word, but, well, I'll use it. Is it naive to think that the ideology of the individuals who are coming in, because they represent a fairly broad spectrum, into the cabinet is far less important than that of the president, at least in the case of Barack Obama? Well, arguably, I'd say even in the case of George W. Bush, who seems to be a lousy manager but a strong ideologue, that really we should be not so concerned about who the appointees are, assuming some level of competence, but more concerned about the road that the president lays out, the map that the president lays out.
I think that's not naive. I think it is absolutely most important. It's amazing because there's so many decisions made, many made quite far away from the president, and yet they all take on the character of the person at the top. It is amazing how the direction that is set, particularly in the early months and years of an administration, kind of creates a jurisprudence of the administration, and the president's intimately involved in setting that direction. But I also think it's less important the characteristics or the ideology of any one person than it is the blend. Policymaking is a process of bringing people with a lot of different considerations together. You can't make healthcare without people who care about the budget, who care about the economy, who care about jobs, who care about international competitiveness. All of those people need to be at the table. And once a decision is made that distills all their perspectives, then all of them should be on board behind it and trying to help get it accomplished and not spend their time arguing from their own parochial perspective something different. And so you can have a blend of ideologies across the board, and the president who makes the choice, having heard advice from that perspective, is really the one who sets the course.
Your sense that Barack Obama is up to this task? I mean, from the way he ran his campaign, it seems to me like he may well be one of the best presidents of the last century, but is your sense consistent with that?
Well, what I understand from everyone who I've spoken with who's close to him in the decision-making process, and many of my friends have been involved in the campaign, my sense is that he's sort of perfectly suited for the kind of process that I described. He's got a great intellectual curiosity, something I would argue that we've lacked in our leadership in the last few years. He's smart and incisive, so he gets a sense of what the challenge is, and he asks the right questions. He wants to hear someone argue with him. He doesn't just want to hear people say yes. And then he's comfortable making a choice and moving on because the complexity of the issues ahead of him and the volume. I mean, we're talking about transformative change in sectors of our country and our economy and in areas of policy at a rate of change that we haven't seen in decades and decades. And to do all of that in parallel, maybe you can only do it all at the same time. You need a moment of great crisis to have the bold change happen, but you've got a lot on your plate, and you need someone with that kind of management temperament. And so far, if you look at the people he's assembled, they are very smart. They are also intellectually curious, and he will be very well advised, and I hope we'll have organized for him a good process that allows him to make decisions effectively.
You were previously the Deputy Assistant Secretary at HUD, and one of the chapters that you wrote is the National Economic Council chapter. What are your thoughts on the interface between the housing bubble and crisis, the credit crisis, the economy in general? And I'm sorry, we just have a minute left before we have to wrap up this hour.
Well, I think, yes, I think the important point is that, and I think this team gets it, that housing was at the center of, and the housing bubble and the real obscene neglect and regulation and oversight of the housing finance markets was at the heart of this crisis, and it has to be at the heart of the solution. And my sense from the people I've been talking to is that this team totally understands that, and we're going to have to see some pretty dramatic changes in housing policy and essentially rebuild our housing finance system from the bottom up. Go ahead.
Wouldn't $350 billion be better spent giving it to householders to refinance their mortgages the way Franklin Roosevelt did, as opposed to giving it to bankers so that they can buy smaller banks and give themselves bonuses?
I certainly think that it's unconscionable that we've spent $350 billion in bailout, and none of it has gone towards mortgage restructuring. I think that it's not unimportant to keep the banking system working, but we clearly have neglected the root of the problem.
Very well said. Sarah Rosen-Wartell contributed two chapters to Mark Green's new book, Change for America, Progressive Blueprint for the 44th President. Excuse me. Sarah, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure, Tom. Take care.
Great talking with you today. It's Anything Goes Friday. We'll be taking your calls on the topic of your choice right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from home today. We couldn't get out the driveway. We had a snowstorm. We've had a week of them here in Portland, Oregon. And this city does not do well with snow. And I just couldn't get up the hill. So we're sitting here in 30 feet of water, 100 feet from shore. And Higgins is hanging out in the room with me. You may have heard him meowing from time to time. There's some ducks sitting outside the window. Our next-door neighbor has been feeding them, and he's been going nuts. So anyhow, 866-303-2270, our telephone number, and TomHartmann.com for our live chat room. We don't have our live video stream today from AirAmerica.com because I'm not in the studio that has the video feed. But we will be back with that in all probability on Monday, I'm expecting, over the weekend. It might thaw out a little bit here, but boy, is the weather strange. By the way, I saw a science piece this morning, an article in one of the science magazines. And I'm sorry I don't have it in front of me to give you the exact details, but here's the gist of it. The amount of ice all around the world is diminishing at a really rapid rate. The ice is melting, basically. The ice at the North Pole, the ice at the South Pole, the ice near the North Pole, the glaciers in the Alps, the glaciers in the Himalayas, the glaciers in the mountains of South America, the glacier, even Glacier National Park in the United States soon will be without its glacier. And as a result of these melting glaciers and icebergs and ice caps, a lot of heat is being absorbed. And a lot of moisture is being released because that's a big chunk of how these things melt. For example, particularly landlocked ice, when a glacier melts, you know, ice on top of a mountain, the moisture goes up into the air. And in the process of melting, it draws heat out of the air. So the result of this over the short term of an increase in moisture in the air and a reduction of heat in the air is that it seems to get wetter and colder. So, therefore, here in Portland, Oregon, where it very rarely snows, or when it does, it's 1 or 2 days out of the year, we'll get an entire week of freezing cold weather and snow. And it's happening all over the. I mean, just look at Drudge, for example. He's trying to make it seem like, oh my God, there's no such thing as global warming. In fact, we're going into global cooling. Look at all the snow. Well, in fact, that is the result of global warming, the short-term result of global warming. As all of that ice melts, it throws moisture into the atmosphere, which increases cloudiness, which also makes it feel colder, increases snowstorms, which makes it seem like it's getting cold. Over the short term, it seems like it's getting colder. The reason it seems that way is because at the poles, the great stabilizers, it is melting, and the stability is being drained out of the system. The system is going to get more and more crazy. So what we are seeing in this cold that has me trapped in my house here today is that what we are seeing is a symptom of global warming. But you wouldn't know that from you know, the crazies on the right. 866-303-2270 is our telephone number. Joyce in Ithaca, New York. Hey, Joyce, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I'm also snowbound.
Oh, okay. Welcome to the club. There's a lot of us in that situation right now.
Yeah. Great honor and so on. My question is, I've been hearing a lot from especially other hosts on Air America objecting to the minister who's going to be giving the invocation at the inauguration. And my question is, why should there be a minister at all at this governmental secular event? And has there always been Washington, Jefferson, Adams, and so on? Was there always
yes.
a clergyman involved?
I'm not certain, but I'm pretty sure that, you know, the founders were savvy politicians, and
the founders were what? I'm sorry.
Savvy politicians.
Yeah.
And some among them were religious fanatics. Patrick Henry probably is the most well known.
Really.
And, yeah, Patrick Henry was a hardcore, hard right Christian who wanted Christianity written into the Constitution and thought this should be a theological state, basically. And he was considered a crazy by many of his peers. He was considered a crank. But, you know, he was there and he said, you know, his famous "Give me liberty or give me death" mm-hmm. still endures. But most of the things that he said people have long forgotten, although they are quoted very often in the writings of the right wing, largely the Christian right, who want to bring a theological state to the United States. But, you know, Washington and Jefferson and all those guys, Adams, you know, Adams actually was a Christian. Washington wasn't. Jefferson wasn't. But they tipped their hat to it. You know, they realized that they had to have some symbolic gestures to get along. On the other hand, Americans being at that time mostly citizens of Great Britain, I mean before the country declared its independence, they knew well the history of Great Britain and the religious upheavals and the wars and, you know, Cromwell and the whole mess. And they were very wary, with the exception of the state of Massachusetts, which had become a theocracy for a while in the 1600s, which is why Ben Franklin left Massachusetts, where he was born, and went to Philadelphia. He was horrified by it. But with the exception of Massachusetts, most Americans got it, that it just wasn't that good a thing. And so there was this symbolic thing of, yeah, okay, we'll have, you know, a pastor for Congress, and Congress will pay his salary. But, you know, he's not going to do much. So, you know, I would say that we have it because it's tradition. We have it because America is oddly one of the most religious of the industrialized countries. You can build a very strong case that it's a violation of the separation of church and state, and that arguably is even unconstitutional. But the reality, the political reality, is it's not going to go away. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I talked about this on the air yesterday. I personally think that this Barack Obama inviting Rick Warren to do this invocation is consistent with exactly what he said he was going to do when he campaigned, which is reach across the aisle, reach out to people who disagree with him, try to bring them, and particularly their followers. I'm not so concerned is the wrong phrase. I am not so naive as to believe that Rick Warren is going to change his mind on things like gay marriage, for example. But I do think that the 10, 20, 30 million people who look to him and as in some ways some sort of a leader or a significant figure, those people can be reached. And many of those people, I mean, you know, he now, for example, is an advocate of doing something about global warming. He is a strong advocate of doing something about AIDS in the United States and around the world. He's a strong advocate of doing something about poverty, both in the United States and in Africa. None of that excuses his god-awful homophobic comments, but my point is that he has broken from the last generation of right-wing Christian crazies, the Falwells and the Robertsons, and moved in a more progressive direction. And my hope would be that the rest of the Christian conservative fundamentalist movement can be reached at some level and might break with him and come into the fold. So I think that this actually strategically might be a very smart thing. Time will tell, but I'm not willing to condemn Barack Obama for it. I'm very enthusiastic about condemning Rick Warren, though, for the comments
he's
made.
Well, we've got to wait and see what he does.
Yeah, you're right. And like I said, he's doing what he said he was going to do, and we shouldn't be surprised by it. Joyce, I got to move along. Thank you very much for the call. It's great to hear from you. I appreciate it. Mike in Los Angeles. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Ahoy.
Ahoy. Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, I just wanted to take issue with Thomas Jefferson to some extent about the existence of English common law predating Christianity in Britain on a couple of bases. One is that it didn't end when the Christians showed up. It was a development that went on for many centuries in which various bishops were greatly involved, including in 1100 when the Charter of Liberties was secured against King Henry I, which acknowledged that the king was not above the law. And in the 13th century with Magna Carta, various bishops were involved in securing that. But also, it appears that there's something which Jefferson was not aware of in his time. That is that there were Christians in England, rather, during Roman times. That's been established by archaeology, and it helps to understand that old myth or legend about Christ having visited England, you know, in the hymn Jerusalem, and did these feed in ancient times, et cetera.
Right.
So,
no, I think Jefferson acknowledged that, but what he was saying was that prior to the Heptarchy, there was a 200-year period when English common law was being written, was being formed. After the Romans left England in 400, more or less, there was a 200-year period before England became a Christian nation when British common law was founded, and it was not founded in Christianity.
You know,
that was his point.
I'm not entirely convinced that we can say to a certainty that Christianity did not exist after the Romans left, given the nature.
Certainly there were Christians present there. It did not exist as a power of the state, as something that was forming common law, was his point. But yeah, if you Google my name in quotes and Judge Moore in quotes, you will find an article that's still on the server over at commondreams.org. It's also on my website, in which I lay out his quotes. And you can read his quotes in context. I think you'll find it interesting. Mike, thanks for the call. 866-303-2270. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoying Republicans by defending the Constitution. Tom Hartman, Nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
A big name in anti-aging right now is Dr. Arthur Perry. He's been all over TV. He's heard on radio. He has a practice in New York City on Fifth Avenue. Here's the twist, though. Dr. Perry is a plastic surgeon, but he likes to have his patients try a cream called Night Skin before they go schedule their procedures. Night Skin goes on while you sleep. It supports natural collagen and elastin production. So when you use Night Skin, it reduces the appearance of your fine lines. It makes your skin smoother. It even fades away those unwanted brown spots that come with age. Dr. Perry says many of his patients call off their procedure appointments after using Night Skin because they're that happy with the results they see in the mirror. Now Dr. Perry's Night Skin is available for anyone to get risk-free. Dial 1-800-542-6003. That's 1-800-542-6003. Call right away for your risk-free trial of the Night Skin Anti-Aging Cream. Dial 1-800-542-6003. That's 1-800-542-6003.
Taking the complicated and making it sound simple.
This is a change in the definition of what America is.
Rachel Maddow.
We've long had a very, 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 very diverse country. We just have been very resistant to the idea that our government ought to look as diverse as our country.
That has now changed.
But it is also a big day for the Democratic Party, and it is a very big day for the Republican Party.
Rachel Maddow.
Which now has no obvious leader, no clear direction.
Evening, 6 to 8.
No clear guiding ideology, either economically or in terms of foreign policy.
On AM 620 KPOJ.
Does your company need a new facility? I'm about to tell you something you might not believe, something the conventional construction companies don't want you to know. You can save a surprising amount in both time and money with a new premium quality building. How? Talk with Anthem Steel about a pre-engineered steel building. For valuable free information, just call 1-800-500-8193. Not only does an Anthem Steel building save you time and money, it's also fully customizable. Choose the size you want. Even choose the look of brick, stone, or stucco. And you won't believe how much you can save over conventional construction. This is information traditional construction companies don't want you to know. But if you're on the verge of building a new space, choose a sturdy, pre-engineered steel building from Anthem Steel and put all that extra time and money where it belongs, back into your business. For valuable free information, call 1-800-500-8193. That's 1-800-500-8193. 1-800-500-8193.
Men, are you urinating more frequently? Do you wake up to urinate? Now be honest, is your sex drive what it used to be? Don't ignore the warning signs. Prostate problems begin around age 40, and by 60, one out of every two men will have these symptoms, and they do not go away. Take Superbeta Prostate. It has 3,000 times more concentration of the key ingredient in saw palmetto. It's so powerful, you'd have to take 100 saw palmetto capsules in order to get the same health benefits of one Superbeta Prostate. Try it risk-free for 30 days and give your prostate the nutrition it needs. For a risk-free trial of Beta Prostate, dial 1-800-291-5421. That's 1-800-291-5421. With Super Beta Prostate, you get results or you get your money back. Dial 1-800-291-5421. That's 1-800-291-5421.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Crow, cancer survivor. If you want to know where the leading cancer research is being done, check out City of Hope Cancer Center. New drugs, new treatments that are saving lives everywhere. For information, go to CherylCrowForHope.org.
Music Millennium has over 100,000 gift ideas, including the largest recorded music selection in the Northwest, music and movie DVDs, vinyl, vintage toys and games, and other unique gift ideas. Happy holidays from Music Millennium, located at 32nd and East Burnside.
Now back to Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back. Hey, there's Higgins. Say hi, Higgins. Is that a duck? Look out, it's a duck. Okay, Higgins is getting a little upset here. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. 20 minutes past, 22 minutes, no, 21, I don't know what time it is here. 21 minutes, I got three different clocks in front of me, and they all say different things. That's what happens when you do your show from home. 21 minutes past the hour, 866-303-2270, the telephone number. Tom and the killer cat here, and Louise is lurking around the house somewhere with you. Tom in Oceanside, California. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind today?
Hey, how you doing, Tom? I've been on hold since Bernie. I was trying to ask him a opinion, and then the economist as well. How do you think it would work, instead of bailing out the auto industry, that money and give it to American citizens in the form of a rebate or just a check like they were willing to issue the car companies, and put some restrictions on it where anyone with a car that's like 10 years or older would get a check for maybe $8, and they're obligated to buy an American-made car that gets over 2 miles per gallon.
It's and, a real Tom, those kind of things. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're breaking up. Pardon me?
Those kind of things are really seductive. I mean, that's basically what the rebate checks were. You know, here's $300 or $600 or whatever that's been done twice now during the Bush administration. The problem is that they are short-term stimulations, and they don't deal with the structural problem, the long-term structural problem, which is that as wages decline, steadily continue to decline in the United States, and productivity continues to increase, in part because we're becoming more productive in the United States, and in part because we're using overseas productivity, you have an economy that is unstable. You have to have increases in wages, if you want, which is what drives demand, if you want to have an economy that is in balance and that is stable and that works. So you would get a short-term stimulation from what you're describing, but it wouldn't solve the long-term problem. The way to solve the long-term problem is to increase wages. It's just real simple.
It seems to me it would raise demand. And one of
it
my
would,
other...
over the short term, you know, for a month or two, but not for 5 years.
It would also help get a lot of gas guzzlers off the road.
It would.
But my other point is to Bernie and all the Democratic congressmen.
Keep in mind, by the way, Bernie's not a Democrat.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's independent.
That's
I'm
right.
Sorry. But the point being, let them filibuster, because I have a lot, I know a lot of Republicans that are still blaming the Democrats for not accomplishing anything in Congress.
Oh yeah,
they don't know that it's the Republican filibuster that's keeping anything from happening. So put it in front of people, because the corporate media that we have is doing an awful good job of hiding it.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And this is something Bernie has called for over and over and over again. He, you know, he doesn't beat up on Harry Reid because he's a polite guy. It's certainly implicit in what he's saying is, you know, when he's saying, hey, you know, let's have a filibuster, bring in the cots, bring in the pizza. Let's do this. You know, if you're going to do this, we'll do it. And, you know, we'll do, as he said today, he said, we'll do it 24/7. You know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, we'll let you guys stand there and pontificate about how the American worker has to take a pay cut, if that's what you want to do. Now, the problem is that has to come from Harry Reid. That has to come from the leadership. The leadership has to make that decision that they're going to force the Republicans to actually filibuster rather than just roll over. And so, you know, it's so far that hasn't happened. Bernice in Dearborn, Michigan. Hey, Bernice, what's up?
Hi, Tom. We've been discussing the destruction of the middle class, and that recalls to mind John Edwards, a longtime powerful opponent of what he termed the two Americas.
Mm-hmm.
How long must John Edwards continue to wear his scarlet letter before we begin to allow his defense of the middle class to be heard?
Respect for the rest of his political career. You know, Gary Hart is still on the outside looking in for, you know, what was arguably a less severe sin. Not just arguably, I would say was, you know, a much less severe sin. His wife wasn't dying of cancer. So I just think John Edwards is toast. You know, hopefully he can do some good stuff, but, you know, I think he's toast. Hey, Higgins, quit that. Excuse me. Higgins has decided to use the wall as a scratching post. Not a good idea. Andrew in Los Angeles. Hey, Andrew, what's up? Andrew, you're on the air.
Yes, yes. Hello?
Yes, sir. You are on the air, sir.
Yes. Hi, Tom. This is Andrew. I'm first-time caller and avid listener. And I have a question and a comment. You know, I was listening to Mr. Batra, And you see, the Bush government wants to bail out the car industry, but put a cap on what the unions can earn and compared to the non-unions. So if they're going to do that, why don't the CEOs get paid in the same ratio like the Japanese ones are? I would think that would be fair.
Right.
What
Which is
think?
About, I believe in Japan, the typical Japanese CEO makes 30 to 50 times what the average worker makes, which is what we were paying in the United States up until Reagan came into office.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's entirely reasonable, Andrew. It's entirely reasonable. And there were no calls for this. I mean, this is the incredible, insane, absurd thing, is that when they were bailing out the banks, you had average workers, in quotes, at some of these investment banks, you know, the guys who were doing the trading, they start with a salary of $350,000 a year. And on top of that, you know, some of them are making as much as $30 to $40 million a year in bonuses. And I didn't hear anybody in Congress say, well, how much are your employees making? And then their CEOs, I mean, well, there were a few voices raised about maybe the CEOs shouldn't take $100 million bonus anymore. But nobody's talking about giving up their corporate jets. Why? Because they're not union workers. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Wasn't Jesus a community organizer? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KBOJ. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Because you're mine, I walk the line. I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out. Pull the tie that binds, because you're mine, I walk the line. Because
it is 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you and your support group for democracy in America. And downright crazy stuff going on in the world out there, I'll tell you. This time, yeah, maybe, I don't know, maybe we're all crazy. But Sarah Palin has a Alaska trooper problem, and so do her prospective in-laws. The mother, Sherry Johnson, of Levi Johnson, the young man who, how do you politely say it, knocked up her daughter, Bristol. The mother-in-law, soon to be, just got busted. 6 felony counts of misconduct involving a controlled substance. So we don't know what the details are, whether she's, you know, got a little pot in her car or whether she's running a meth lab. I mean, I have no idea. But this is part of a police undercover investigation, so it looks like it might be something serious. Another little bit of odd news from the Sarah Palin camp. 866-303-2270. Our telephone number, Susan in Santa Fe, New Mexico, listening on KTRC. Hey, Susan.
Hi. I'm a white lesbian. I'm 65 years old, been doing this a long time, and I totally agree with you about Barack Obama's choice of Rick Warren and the reasons that you have. What confuses me is when I think if I were president-elect, and I were to choose an openly racist person or anti-American Indian person to give an invocation, I don't think I could do it. And It confuses me because I think Obama is right in what he's doing.
Well,
I thought you might could throw some light on this.
Sure. There's quite a difference. Arguably, there's not much difference between racism and homophobia is the wrong word. We don't have, at least I don't know of a word that is the equivalent of, that implies hatred rather than fear. But,
right.
In any case, so I lack a word for it. But right now, we don't have laws that are being debated in the United States about whether or not people of different races can marry. You know, those are debates we had in the 1950s and 1960s.
Right.
And so that was the debate of a different era. That debate is over. Racism is now recognized as an anachronism, as something that is sad and sick and over the top by the vast majority of Americans.
Yeah.
And yet the equivalent ism, let's call it homophobia-ism or something, homo-ism, gay-ism. I don't know. We need a word. And maybe it exists out there, and somebody will tell me. This fear or hatred of gays, that has not yet been widely accepted or widely acknowledged by most Americans, as we tragically saw in Prop 8 in California. And so that dialogue still needs to be conducted. You know, to bring these people into the fold and to help them wake up. I would submit to you that the people who are taking that, you know, pro Prop 8 position are the same people who 50 years ago were taking the anti-miscegenation position, you know, saying it should be against the law for blacks and whites to marry. And out of the same level of I don't want to call it friendly ignorance, but, you know, I don't think that most of them are malicious. I think they're just, they've never had contact with gay people in their lives. They haven't, or they haven't realized that they have. Let's say that, because certainly everybody has. And so right now this is an active issue, and it has. And frankly, I think that 20 years from now, maybe even 10 years from now, we will look back on Rick Warren giving that opening address and say, you know, that was really absurd, the positions that guy took. He was obscene in those positions. You know, the vast majority of Americans will come to the belief and understanding that you and I share, that his positions are, you know, out in the wilderness. I mean, just way out there. But the difference, you know, I've heard that argument, you know, well, you know, if he's going to have somebody who's anti-gay, why doesn't he have somebody who's anti-black on? Well, because that's not a topic that is being discussed. And frankly, I don't think he's having Rick Warren on because he's anti-gay. You know, he's having him on because he's the leader, arguably the leader of the next generation of the Christian conservative evangelist movement.
Yeah.
And which is a movement that we all frankly need to reach out to.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my response to that for better. I realize it's imperfect. But, Susan, thank you very much for the call.
I got you.
Thank you. Bye. Yeah, good talking with you. Pat in Nevada, California. Hey, Pat. Or is that Novato? Pat? No, Pat. Okay. Orion in Long Beach. Hey, Orion, what's up today?
Hey, Tom. I was just calling to see if you ever saw it's a documentary called The Flight from Death. And it's based on a book from Ernest Becker called Death Denial.
I'm not familiar with it. I'm familiar with the concept, you know, in psychology of death denial, but not the movie or the book.
Okay. Well, the documentary is pretty good, and basically it just explains why there's racism or wars against religion or just religion in general is because there's this underlying death anxiety that everybody has, and in order to cope with it, they need to adapt some kind of belief system that basically comforts that anxiety that there's going to be something else after death, because you don't really know what happens.
Right.
So, you know, when I'm hearing about Rick Warren and the evangelical right, it makes a lot of sense to me on why they behave the way they do. Even though you throw a lot of logic and facts their way, it just doesn't seem to click because, basically I'm threatening their, comfort or their buffer, that's alleviating that death anxiety.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And the constructs, all the social and religious and political constructs that they've created to insulate themselves from that. You know, as I recall, it's been a long time. It's been 30 years since I read Freud at any length. But I think that Freud also suggested that part of the sex drive, at least as it's acted out, might in a societal way as opposed to a pure animal way. It has to do with trying to avoid death or trying to create a sense of immortality, producing, you know, future generations and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's an interesting
and
one.
Really, a really cool part of the documentary that I thought was really interesting is that at a university, they actually picked people at random to go in a room, and they had cards with people's names on them. And they were told to put hot sauce inside little cups, and they don't know the person, the name they're reading, but they're supposed to put enough hot sauce that they feel is appropriate for that person. And so whenever the name was similar to that person's race, like if they were white, or if they were Asian, they would put, you know, whatever amount. But it, the moment the name was different, like if it was a different nationality or a different race, it was always more. They put more subconsciously, they put more than what they would have their own race.
Yeah, racism is real, Orion, and thank you for the call and for pointing that out. Harvard, as I recall, University, we did a show on this about a year ago, had a website up where you could take a test to find out what, you know, what level of unconscious racism you have. And, you know, I took the test, and it's there. And it had to do with flashing pictures of a black person and a white person and flashing words and you know, making instantaneous associations, kind of a hand-eye thing. And none of us are immune to it, of any race, frankly. And but racism is, in a political and a social sense, is only real among the people who have the power in the culture. It's but we're getting into another area of distinction. Steve in San Diego. Hey, Steve, you want to talk about 9/11? Steve?
Hello, Tom.
Hey, Steve, you're on the air.
Yeah, hey, Tom. Thanks for picking my call. Hey, you know, in the past, on several different occasions, you've referred to yourself as an agnostic with regards to the events that happened on 9/11.
Well, yeah, I might have used that word. I it doesn't mean that I don't have an opinion or I don't have a hell of a lot of questions. What I mean to say by that is that I don't know what the answers are.
Okay. You know, and I guess my only point is that, you know, I mean, I respect your opinion, but it's, I think this issue is so black and white that, you know, the official government take on this is just a load of, you know, I have to state this mildly, but it's a load of BS.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with that. you know, absolutely. But that doesn't tell us what did happen. And you know, there's a lot of good researchers out there chinking away at the edges, and some of them right at the core of this thing. And the 9/11 Truth Movement is doing some real extraordinary yeoman's work, and needs to be acknowledged regularly. And we need to encourage more of it. But, like, you know, my point was, Lamar and I spent almost 20 years trying to figure out who killed John Kennedy and Martin Luther King, and I think we finally got awful close to a kernel of it, but it, you know, it took a lot of time and a lot of money, and we were standing on the shoulders of thousands of other people who had prepared the ground, and this is, you know, well covered up enough and buried deeply enough at the moment that, or pieces of it are, I mean, you know, pieces of it are right out there for everybody to see, that I think it's going to be a while before we can really get down to saying, okay, here's what, who did, when, and how, and why.
Then my question to you is, why don't we hear more about this on I know you did like an hour with Kevin Ryan and the guy from Skeptic Magazine.
Yeah.
Why don't we hear more about this?
Well, I think we should. And I've had David Ray Griffin on this show three or four times in the last 4 or 5 years. I think it's a topic that we need to visit more often, frankly, and in all probability will. It's just, I don't have a good answer for you, Steve, as to why the corporate media, the mainstream media, doesn't touch it more often. Thanks for the call, though, and thanks for raising it.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Fighting mind-numbing incompetence. Tom Hartman, nationwide. Weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
You know, the ones, fives, tens, twenties, fifties, and hundreds, that money is backed by what is called the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, the Federal Reserve.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I don't know about you, but I have no faith in this government. And as far as its credit rating, if the U.S. government were rated by one of these rating companies,
what would it be? Zero worth? It's Mike Malloy.
I mean, how do you rate a nation that's $12 trillion in debt?
Evening, 8 to 11. AM 620 KDOJ. 620KDOJ.com.
Imagine being able to fill your palm with a rare piece of history. It's possible because the New York Mint has just issued an exclusive proof of the breathtaking $100 Union. Proposed by George T. Morgan, it was to be the largest U.S. coin ever in denomination, weight, and size. Now, in a rare offering, the New York Mint has announced the release of a limited quantity of $100 Union coins to the public. Struck in gleaming proof silver and sealed at the mint, this $100 Union has never and will never be circulated. This coin will be offered for a limited time on a first-come, first-served basis by calling the New York Mint at 1-800-500-9551. This brilliant coin masterpiece fills the palm and the senses with weight and historical presence. To get your hands on this unique piece of history and receive a free collector's DVD, call the New York Mint directly. 1-800-500-9551. Quantities are limited. Call 1-800-500-9551.
If you could increase the effectiveness of your brain, would you do it? If you could discover an easy way to make your brain smarter, stronger, and faster for absolutely no cost at all, would you do it? Well, now you can by requesting a powerful free demo of IQ from Infinite Mind. Right now, when you call, we'll send you an absolutely free demo showing you how easy it is to increase your brain power in as little as 7 minutes. It's called IQ, and it will unleash your mind. Not only that, but you'll be able to read up to 1,000% faster, allowing you to read 10 books in the time it takes others to read one. To increase the effectiveness of your brain in 7 minutes for free, call 1-800-500-3112. What have you got to lose? It only takes 7 minutes. It increases the speed and efficiency of your brain, and you can try it out absolutely free. Call now to get your free demo. Call IQ at 1-800-500-3112. That's 1-800-500-3112.
Road conditions have you worried? Enjoy the sure-footed confidence of a new four-wheel drive Jeep from Beaverton's Northwest Jeep. Save up to $14,000 on select models now during Northwest Jeep's 2008 closeout. See their entire inventory online at nwjeep.com. Your best bet for Jeep, Beaverton's Northwest Jeep.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared.
Prevent your child's next asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. Visit www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many. Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
I see trees of green. Red roses too, I see them blue for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Hey, thanks so much to Louise Hartman, to my producer Sean Taylor, to Stephanie Whiteman, Shelley Osti, Marcus Hillman at Air America, to Sue Nethercutt, the folks in our chat room, and Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for listening to our program. Thank you so much. And Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service is on the line with us. Hey, Ellen, what's going on in the world?
Okay, well, we have a president-elect who has announced his new cabinet, or at least some new members of his cabinet, and also Mr. LaHood, a representative from Illinois, will be transportation secretary. No surprises. We've already heard about Hilda Solis. I think his cabinet is actually shaping up to be very good. Today, however, the president announced his federal government a buyout, and he got the president-elect was supportive of it. However, Nancy Pelosi is concerned about what you were concerned about in terms of some of the worker rights. Now, there is a lining to this major cloud in the deal because there are binding conditions in this money, and they the auto companies have to provide warrants for non-voting stock. They must accept limits on executive compensation and corporate use of corporate jets. The debt owed to the government would be senior to other debts as long as that's allowable by law. They have to allow the government to examine the books and records. They have to report the government has the power to block any large transactions of more than $100 million. They have to comply with the fuel efficiency standards, and they must not issue new dividends while they owe government debt. However, these are the things that were included by Treasury, but they're added as targets. So this is the way out. And one is to reduce the unsecured debt by two-thirds in an equity exchange, make a voluntary employee benefit association payments in terms of stock, and I'm not really sure I understand that one. Eliminate the jobs bank, which I have not done the research on that either, and not quite sure what that is. Now, here's the two kickers. Work rules that are, now again, this is a target. It is not in stone. So obviously Barack Obama can come in a month and change everything. Work rules that are competitive with transplant, that means Japanese, and other auto manufacturers by December 31st, 2009, and wages that are competitive of those transplant auto manufacturers by December 31st, 2009. But that was not a condition. It's a target.
Yeah. I can tell you what the what was the point that you said you were unsure of, what was it referred to as the worker benefits?
Right.
That has to do with the retirees. The retirees, there was a program that the UAW negotiated with the Big Three a year or so ago and with the government as I recall, it was $8 billion from one of the companies and a little less than that from one of the others, that they would put into a fund to give that would be administered for the retirees for their health care benefits and their retirements. And, you know, it seemed at the time to many people it was trumpeted by the press as kind of a victory for the workers. But in fact, it was less money than they would have gotten if they just continued to get their pension and health care. And it put an absolute limit on the liability of the companies. The problem is that that money has not been paid out. And so it's an outstanding liability against these corporations right now. And so what the government is saying is it hasn't been paid out. And by the way, you're going to negotiate it even down from where it is right now. So it's basically screwing the retirees. That's what it's all about.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyhow, this whole thing,
yeah.
As you say, the silver lining is that we're talking about targets here in some of the most toxic areas to workers, and you know you could argue that this is Bush throwing a bone to Corker, but the you know at least the money is going to be forthcoming. I'm not sure if I won the bet with you or you won the bet with me though. It's because there's union busting.
Well,
yeah,
I think
this.
The jury's still out.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, a lot's going to depend on how it's dealt with. There's also a report. There was a report in, I think it was Bloomberg this morning. This was about 5 hours ago. I read this. About the same time that Bush was announcing this, they were reporting that that back-channel folks at GM were saying that they are expecting to get the money from the government, and they're going to use it to fund a bankruptcy, which will then be used to break the union contracts. And so that's still a possibility. I mean, GM can take the money. They can say, okay, great, thank you very much for the money. Now we've got the bridge financing that we couldn't get out in the free market, or the free market, ain't no such thing. Bridge financing we couldn't get from the banks to use to go into Chapter 11 reorganization and discharge our obligations to our employees, particularly the retirees. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if GM was to go ahead and do that.
Well, they could do that. The question is, A, would the bankruptcy court really allow them to do that? And, two, what would Congress do? Would Congress call the note? All of those kinds of things are possible.
Does Congress have the power to call the note? I think the this is outside of the realm of Congress. This is the Treasury Department and the President using money that's already been appropriated.
But the funds, the second half of those funds come from Congress, and Nancy Pelosi said those are not going to be released without certain conditions.
Right, but the scenario that I would portray is that over the next week or two, Pelosi releases the funds, you know, because the Democrats are cowering in the corner, right?
Right.
And so the funds are released, and then GM declares bankruptcy, and busts up the union. So we'll see. I mean, that's I'm. I guess in some regards, when it comes to the fate of labor in this country and what corporations will do, I guess I'm an eternal pessimist, but I don't know. Anyhow, Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News, talkradionews.com. Thanks, Ellen, for coming on today.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. On Monday, Lawrence Yun, the chief economist for the National Association of Realtors, is going to be here to talk about the housing market. And Michael Ratner, Ellen's brother, the president of the Center for Constitutional Rights, is going to be talking about his new book, The Trial of Donald Rumsfeld, a Prosecution. Prosecution. Oh, fine thing. Don't forget, my friends, activism begins with you. Democracy begins with you. It all starts with you. Tag, you're it. Have a great weekend.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.